This is the Warrior Mind Podcast, and I'm your host, Greg Swanson. Podcasting from beautiful Bend, Oregon, the Warrior Mind Podcast is a personal empowerment series that provides you the information required to develop a mindset of a warrior, maximize your human potential, and achieve peak performance. The Warrior Mind Podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment, and show notes and links can be found at www.warriormindcoach.com/blog. Please come back often and feel free to add the podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. If this is your first time listening, thanks for coming. If you're returning, thank you for your continued support. This is episode 347. And today I interview a wonderful young gentleman, Sean McCabe. Sean started out his career basically by doing hand lettering. And through his story, which you'll hear, he evolved this into a process where he now helps others find that overlapping space between what they love to do and what they can do for a living. He's releasing a new book called Overlap. So today we talk about how that happened. How did Sean go from hand lettering into helping people basically live a life of passion and finding out what they love and how to make that transition between doing what you love and doing what you do for a living. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this interview with Sean McCabe. Sean, thank you so much for joining me. I know you are extremely busy. You have your fingers in many pies, and I just appreciate you taking time to have a little conversation with me today.
Oh, Greg, you're too kind. The pleasure's all mine. I'm super excited to be here today. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So I want to get, for people who aren't aware of who you are, and there may be one or two out there, could you give a little bit of background of yourself and then how you got into what you're doing today?
Yeah, absolutely. So depends on how far you want to go back, but I have a background in design and art. And I used to be a hand lettering artist. I would draw letters by hand. And, you know, you think of like the Coca-Cola logo. It's not a font, but it's custom lettering. And that's the kind of thing I would do. This was just something that I started on the side, you know, while I had a full-time job and was building websites. But on the side, I was creating lettering. And, you know, just for fun, I was sharing some of my work online for a couple of years, and no one really noticed in the beginning, but gradually people started noticing, and they were asking if I could do commissions and if I sold products. And I'm condensing the story a lot, but I ended up being able to not only make a living as a hand lettering artist and go from, you know, a day job making websites to being an artist, freelancer, making great money for myself, eventually teaching others how to do it, leading workshops and producing courses. And, you know, my whole life has been kind of this theme of overlapping from one thing to the next, where I've got the main gig, the day job, paying the bills, but there's always this thing on the side, like this creative void for me that I'm trying to fill.
Wow. I mean, that sounds like myself and so many other people. And what I'm hearing in between the lines is that you had this passion for this creative letter writing, and you, because it was your passion, it fueled you, and you kept pursuing that. You kept expressing your passion, expressing your inner self through your lettering. What I'm hearing is it wasn't the intent to make money at it, but then eventually, because your passion infiltrated all of your work, that people took notice of it. And then once that happened, then you started to be rewarded for it.
That's very true. And even more intensely, it wasn't just that, like, it turned into something where I was able to make money, but I actually purposefully did not pursue hand lettering for many years. It was something I used to do as a kid in middle school. And as I grew older, I stopped doing it. And I figured, what's the point? You know, this is never something that could be a job, so why should I pursue it? And it wasn't until I met a designer who I had contacted online, and he was coming into town and asked if I wanted to have coffee. And I looked up to him. I liked his work. He was a hand lettering artist. And he said, you know, if you really enjoy it, he was talking to me over coffee, just do it. It doesn't have to be something that turns into a job. And it was as if he gave me permission, you know, permission to try. And I think that's a missing piece, that a lot of people are not given the permission to explore. We hear things like, pursue your passion. You know, Steve Jobs said it, and, you know, do what you love. And these are well-meaning things, and I think people are inspired by them, but immediately they jump to, okay, I see people making a living with their passion. They're enjoying what they do. They actually like their job. So if I'm going to do this, I need to pick something that could make money. I need to be able to make money from my passion. And it's this pressure. It's so much pressure on this thing that you love to do. Immediately, you're trying to find ways to monetize something that's pure. One way to think of it is like an oak tree, a 50-year-old oak tree. You could lean against this oak tree and it would support you. It would support your weight. But if the tree was very young and just a little sapling, you know, trying to grow, and you tried to lean against it and put your weight against it, you would crush that tree. It hasn't taken root. It hasn't grown into something that can actually support you. And there's this missing piece between figuring out what you're passionate about and eventually making a living from it. And that's this exploratory phase, you know, this period where you give yourself permission to try, freedom to explore before you try and put the pressure of making money on this thing.
I saw one of the videos. That's awesome. One of the videos on your Facebook page talked about having that wanting to pay your bills too quickly by using your passion. And that's what I'm hearing you saying right now, is that we just need to follow our passion and release, what I'm interpreting is, release the attachment to that passion will turn into a money-making opportunity.
Yeah, it's the pressure, right?
Right.
It's because here's what you want to protect against is scarcity mindset. This will kill your passion. If you get in a place where, okay, you're inspired, someone says pursue your passion, and you say, all right, you know what, I'm going to take the leap. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to go after this thing. I'm going to give it my full attention and focus. Well, immediately, you have to pay your bills. You have to put food on the table. You have to pay the rent. And so you're looking around, what's something I can do to make money? What's a client I can take on? You're desperate, right? You're looking around, yep. Who will pay me? And maybe this client comes to you. Maybe you have a prospective client and there's red flags. You know, you see the warning signs. This is not going to be good. They're trying to talk me down on my price. They don't value me. But on the other side, it's like, I got to support my family. I got to take care of people. I got to take care of myself. And you end up compromising. You end up taking on these jobs that you don't want to do, that you shouldn't do. And eventually what was once a passion turns into a job. It's something that you hate. You end up killing the passion. And that comes from this premature, I think, monetization of that passion. Instead of saying, you know what, I'm going to give it space. Mm-hmm. I'm going to explore this thing. I'm going to try it and actually see if it's something that I like doing. Because we have many ideas of things that we could do, many interests, but it's an idea of a passion. You know, maybe you have this idea of being a best-selling novelist, but when you actually do the work of writing the book, you may discover that you don't like the act of writing every day. Mm-hmm. And that's what your reality is going to be like. Your reality day to day is very different from what you envision in your mind. And so it's a matter of giving yourself this space to try something and see if you like the act of doing it.
Right. Oh, that's really, really powerful. And I'm a big proponent of, one, following your passion, and other is, I kind of, when I work with clients, I tell them to, you know, kind of step in two worlds. You're in one world right now where you're working your job, and then you want to go over here into your passion, you know, put a toe into it, then three toes. But let me ask you, Sean, how do you work with, or how did you yourself, or how do you work with clients in helping them neutralize that thought process that I have to do this, or I want to do this passion, I want to make money at it as soon as possible? I mean, because it's out there, right? It's all a lot of people who follow their bliss, they make money at it. And we're kind mm-hmm. of programmed to thinking that we need to be able to turn this into a money-making opportunity. So how do you work, or what suggestions do you have for people to, hey, find this passion, but release the attachment. And that, that might not be the right words that you use, but release this attachment to making money at it and letting people go and have fun with it. What type of suggestions do you have for that?
So I've got a lot of really similar questions to this one over the past 3 to 4 years. And I started writing a book with kind of my breakdown for it. But you know what? I started writing this book and it was the book I wanted to write, not the book people needed to read. And I'm so grateful that I recognized that before I continued. And I ended up scrapping the first 20,000 words. And I went back to the drawing board. I spent the next 3 years having hundreds of conversations with people that I wanted to write this book for at conferences, at meetups, in person. And what I found is the things holding people back were not things like, how do I pick the right business model or understand finances? Those are important things. Mm-hmm. But it was things like, I have so many ideas, I don't know which one to pursue. Mm-hmm. I don't know which thing is the right thing. Or my family doesn't support me, or my spouse doesn't believe in me. And I found all of these things, really common themes, that they're not the type of things that people talk about. They're not the type of things that people address. They jump straight into the business stuff. All right, how do you make money? And I wanted to help people get unstuck and then provide the practical steps. And what I think there are is basically 5 stages. First, you have to find what you're passionate about. Then you need to protect it, you know, kind of like putting a fence around that young sapling, that mm-hmm. little tree. Then you want to invest in it, practice deliberately, build your skill. Then it's monetizing and then marketing. So the first part, finding, is this act of exploration. Then you want to protect it. And the protecting piece, this is important. This is where the day job comes in. Mm-hmm. Everyone's thinking, oh, I need to quit my day job. Well, I mean, if you're working with toxic people, I mean, sure, get out of a bad environment. But the day job is your foundation. Mm-hmm. This is what provides you the freedom to try and explore and build your skills. Because I think the missing piece in all of this is, hey, you know what? It is possible in the age of the internet to make a living at all kinds of niche pursuits, but you have to actually be good at what you're doing.
Right.
You have to actually have that skill. Where does that play in here? Where do you have the time to develop that skill and to practice? Well, you can't practice if you're relying on the thing you're learning to pay the bills. You need something covering the bills in the meantime. Mm-hmm. And that's the day job piece. The day job should cover 100% of your bills, not half of it, not a third of it, not 3/4 of it while you're trying to make up the extra income on the side. The day job is the foundation. And if that foundation isn't solid, everything else is going to crumble.
Right. Oh, yep. Awesome. So let's get back to step one. And I love those steps, because what I heard in the invest in it, and I just will go back to the first part, but what I heard in the invest in it is just not money, but time. It's like from the apprentice to the master, investing in what you're passionate about and investing in that time to get better, to get skilled at it. Would that be a correct interpretation of that step?
Yes. So the investing part is the deliberate practice part. Mm-hmm. You know, the difference between the doing your work isn't practice, it's not deliberate practice. It's the difference between playing one-on-one basketball with your friend and shooting 100 free throws. The latter is really zooming in and honing in on a specific aspect of what you do with the intent to perfect your craft, to get better at what you do, find the weak areas and explore those. You know, if you're a photographer and you've been avoiding the manual mode on your camera, it's setting aside time and committing to learning about that, committing to deliberate practice. If you're a pianist, it's setting aside time to work on those scales so you can execute that chromatic run in a part of a song you want to play. This is the part that's really tough, because we want to play one-on-one basketball. We want to play the part, the popular song at the party on piano. You know, we don't want to do this deliberate practice part, but that's the investment we're talking about here. That's the investment in building your skills so that you can command a good rate from clients or your products in the future.
Awesome. So I wanted to keep on this this subject. How do you work with – so there's a – many of us have an unconscious expectation. So when we start to follow our passion, we're doing it for the long-range goal of perhaps making money at and quitting our job. And we have this expectation we set in ourselves. And we get to this investment part and we go, okay, yeah, I'll invest, you know, a few hours a day. How do you help individuals manage that expectation? I'll just use the word calm down and be okay with if it takes you 2 months, 3 months, 4 months of practice, that's okay, as opposed to, okay, I practiced for a week, now I'm going to monetize it.
The piece of advice I give is, it's the piece of advice people don't really want to hear, but I think it's in a way comforting because it gives you permission to not get things perfect right off the bat. What I suggest is showing up every day for 2 years. Show up every day for 2 years and don't expect any results in that time. Any results you get in the first 2 years are a bonus. Think of those as extra. But you're putting in that upfront work so that you can start to reap the benefits. But it's a delayed benefit. You're not going to see those results right off the bat. People are not going to care right off the bat. And so we're trying this thing. We want to develop our skills for this thing. And we have a picture in our mind of what we want it to look like, whether it's art or a business. It doesn't really matter. We have a picture in our minds of what we want the result to be. And in the beginning, that result is not going to look like the picture in our minds. And especially if you're a perfectionist like me, that can really bug you and even paralyze you and keep you from starting at all. But once you push past it, once you say, you know what, it's not the results, it's not the immediate results that I'm looking at, it's not the perfection of what I created that I'm judging my success by. I'm deciding to say, if I showed up today, that's a success. I'm defining success by whether or not I showed up today. It's Jerry Seinfeld. He was once asked, how can you be such a good comic? And he said, the way to be a better comic is to write better jokes. No surprise there. Mm-hmm. He says, the way to write better jokes is to write every day. And what he would do is he'd get a wall calendar of a whole year, this big, huge calendar on one page. He put it up on his wall. And every time he wrote, he would put an X. He had a big red marker and he'd put an X on that day. Mm. And he said, as you continue to show up, eventually you'll have a chain and you'll like seeing that chain. And he said, your only job is don't break the chain.
Wow. And what's amazing, Sean, is that we all do that in different areas of our life. We have, quote, hobbies that we love to do, whether it's gardening, whether it's exercise, whether it might be something else. And we'll show up every day. We'll do it because we have fun and we don't expect. But it seems that there's this challenge with, and I love the showing up for showing up every day for 2 years, because when I started my podcast, just as a personal example, I think for the first 2 years I had maybe 20 downloads and now I'm over 500,000. So it is a cumulative effect and it's almost like putting money in the bank. But when we have hobbies that we enjoy so much, we don't even think about what the end result is because we enjoy the doing of it. And what I'm hearing is if we can start enjoying that doing and releasing this, it's going to build to a money-making thing. At some point it will. It may be the underlying intention, but we need to enjoy what we're doing. Is that fair to say?
I think you should enjoy the process. If you don't enjoy the process, then everything else falls apart. And I think that's where Steve Jobs comes from when he talks about passion. Passion is what's going to get you through those tough times and almost help you be unreasonable when it counts. You know, like passion, we have these ideas. We think we're passionate about ideas until we try them. Oh, you know what? I don't actually like writing every day. Maybe this whole best-selling novelist isn't for me. You need to find joy and fulfillment in the process. And that's where passion comes from. That's the passion is what gets you through the tough times. You know you're passionate. You know you're passionate when you encounter resistance and you come out on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So what I'm hearing here is that by taking action, one, you'll determine what you really are passionate about, because many people may have the thought of being passionate about something is important as opposed to being passionate about it.
Yeah, it's the difference between the being passionate about the idea and being passionate about the act of doing it.
Right. And the only way, because just from a personal story myself, is when I started on this path, it was like, okay, find my passion. Well, I'm passionate about reading books. I'm passionate about investing. I'm passionate about fitness. I'm passionate about other things. And when I started to pursue the fitness as a personal trainer, I'm going, oh, I don't want to do this for a living. I want to do it for myself. So that eliminated that. But the only way I knew it is what you said, is to take action on it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really good. And that's totally fine to have something that's just for you. It doesn't have to be something that makes money. And in fact, that might even be a great place to focus. Hey, this doesn't have to become a business. I mean, that pressure of, oh, I've got to turn this into my job. Everyone on social media is living this lifestyle, you know, that's so amazing, you know, and I thought I had to have that if I was going to do anything. And once that friend gave me permission to just try and do and explore, that's when I felt freedom. I felt unlocked. And I wasn't doing it because I thought, oh, this is something I can eventually make money from. Now, I mean, fast forwarding several years, I actually no longer do hand lettering because so the story, Greg, it goes, I was working with clients, making great money for myself, and people were asking for products. Hey, do you do, you know, t-shirts and prints? And I said, sure, I'll make those, you know, and those started selling. We still sell and ship physical products across the world every single day. And I'm doing great making money from clients, selling my own products. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of my audience wanted to learn how to do what I did. They wanted to learn how to make a living as a hand lettering artist. They thought that was super interesting. And here I was, I had this business experience that many artists didn't have. There are a lot of starving artists where they love their craft, but they don't understand how to support themselves. Mm-hmm. Because there's this, especially in the art world, there's this prevalent mindset that if you make money from your art, you're a sellout. And so it's a kind of crab mentality where you're trying to escape this bucket of mediocrity, and the other crabs at the bottom of the bucket are pulling you down every time you try to escape. Any one crab could easily get out of the bucket. The reason they don't is because the other crabs pull them back down.
That's a brilliant analogy. Sean, are you familiar with the Japanese term ikigai?
Yes, yes.
So I'm fascinated by it. I've been studying it for a little bit of time here, but would love you to talk about that a little bit, because one of the main things in there is passion. So could you, you know, talk to the listeners about what you feel that is and how have you embraced that?
So I'm actually like only recently become familiar with this concept. So ironically, you've got these four circles and they're all overlapping in a sort of Venn diagram. And there's, you know, what you love, what the world needs, what you're good at, and what you can be paid for. I find that there's a lot of similarities with this and what I've meant with overlap. Mm-hmm. This concept of overlapping. That when I'm talking about overlapping, I'm more meaning, hey, get the foundation of the day job and start a business while you're working a full-time job. Mm. You know, it's not this quit and take a leap and hope for the best, you know, this gap between your day job and what you want to do. Instead, you're bridging that gap with overlap. Mm-hmm. But maybe you can tell me a little bit about what resonates with you the most when it comes to this concept.
Well, part of it, and thank you, is very similar, right? We have these different parts of us that are pulled in different directions, you know, what the world needs. And, you know, and that comes from our mission, but it's the passion, the vocation, the profession. And it's what I like about it. One is it's an ancient concept. And what I like what you're doing is you're kind of taking that and distilling it down to something that's practical that people do. You start to look at ikigai, and it takes a long, long process to go, what's my passion? And then you overlap your passion with what your vocation is. And it's a complex system, which if people have the time, can really get into it. But what I like about your philosophy is that, hey, you find this passion, you determine what you are passionate about by taking action on it. And then once you find it, you start to hone that and you keep your day job at the same time. And so it seems a little bit more easier, at least for Western society, to embrace what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think so, because there's such, I guess the uphill battle for me is getting people to take the financial pressure off of discovering that passion. Because the monetization part comes later, but everyone wants that to come first, because we want to start making money from this, because that's when we feel like it's a real thing.
Right.
But the other thing about monetization and what makes this really scary is when we picture ourselves making a living from something we actually enjoy, maybe not so much a day job that we're in where we feel kind of stuck and not super fulfilled, but that thing that you like doing on the side in your nights and weekends, what if that could be the thing that supports you? When we try to imagine this, maybe at one point you've made a few dollars here and there. Maybe someone asked you to do some work for them, a friend, and they gave you $50 or they gave you $100. You know, maybe you've worked with a client. Maybe you did an original commissioned piece of work. Maybe you've made some money at some point. When you try to think of actually making a living at this, you do some basic math and you say, well, if I made $100 from that and I want to make, you know, say my lifestyle is $5,000 a month is what I would like to live on. You do some math and you're thinking, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to do more than one piece a day. That's not possible. There's no way I could do this. When really you talk to any business owner, any entrepreneur, and you find out they all have these diversified sources of income. Mm-hmm. They're not relying on one thing or one type of thing to support them, but there are many different ways to make money from just about anything. I've kind of narrowed them down to three things. You have client work, products, and teaching. So essentially, you're doing work for others, you're mm-hmm. performing a service, or there's something you've created that you sell on a regular basis, or you know, and I recommend teaching as the last one, because by the time you've worked with clients and sold products, you have a lot of knowledge. You have a lot of experience that you can share. Then you can put that out there in the form of teaching. Can be books. It could be workshops. It could be coaching. I mean, obviously, you know that. Maybe you can speak more to, monetizing your knowledge.
Right. And what you said is exactly, I was looking at this going, hey, that's what I did. So I started out coaching clients, and then I found a theme that came up with all of the clients. And so I produced a book that would address most of that. And then I produced some courses online, and now I'm doing teaching around it. So that is, you know, I mean, you're perfect on that, on doing that. And that's part of the monetize. I think that's where people jump to. They go from find your passion to monetize, and then they get stuck with monetizing because they don't know how to do the marketing. But I'd like just to come back and revisit real quickly the protect it and invest in it. I think if those aren't put into place, the foundation of delivering your passion to the world isn't going to be as successful as it is if you don't protect it.
You know, and I think that's where the imposter syndrome comes from too, because when you jump straight to the monetization, you're looking at what other people do. Oh, they're coaching, they're writing books, they're teaching courses. You start to feel like, oh, I don't really know what I'm doing. You know, maybe who am I to teach? And you're thinking of all these masters and people ahead of you, and you're hoping they don't notice you because you don't really know what you're doing. Whereas if you put in the time to invest in your passion and develop those skills, then you actually have something that you can offer to the world. And I know even for myself and many of us who we have done the work, we have spent the 9,000 hours drawing letters, we have put in the time, we sometimes still feel like imposters. And I think that comes as a result of focusing on the wrong audience. We're looking to our heroes and the masters in our field, and we're thinking, I can't teach better than them. I can't teach them anything, but they're not your audience.
Right.
All you need to know to teach is more than any one other person.
You know,
that's it.
You know, Sean, it's so funny. I had a friend a while ago, Frederick Lehrman, kind of an eccentric individual, just really out there. He did dragon farming in his mind and some really crazy things. But I had a conversation with him, and he talked about he started to give guitar lessons because he loved to play, but he was teaching himself. And he said, all I needed to be was one lesson ahead of my students, and I could teach them.
Exactly, because even if you're, you know, let's say level 10 is a master and you're thinking I'm only a level 3, well, there's so many beginners coming into your field who are right at that level 1. You can help them get to level 2. You can help them go from level 1 to level 2. And to take it even further, you may actually be more qualified to teach the level 1 person than a master is. Mm-hmm. Because they're so far removed. Is the curse of knowledge. You ask a billionaire how to make $1 million, and it's the answer he gives you is not going to be very practical for you. You ask him how to make $1,000, and it's the same as asking any normal person how do you make a penny. They're going to tell you pick it up off the ground, right. And you're like, that doesn't really help me, you know. But you're close to it. You just recently came out of this stage. You recently experienced the struggles, and you know intimately how those people feel. That qualifies you to teach.
Right. I think that's a really, really very valid and important part just to emphasize, is that when we are learning or we are investing in ourselves, in our passion, that we often do look to the leaders, the senseis, the masters, and we hold ourselves back. But in reality, if we can look at what is that gift that we can bring to those others, I think that'll empower us. And I think that's a great perspective that you bring to that part of investing in ourselves. I heard you talk about 9,000 hours. Are you a believer of the 10,000 hour theory?
Well, I'm very familiar with it. I think it's definitely a good rule of thumb, and it kind of gets your foot in the door. I don't know. I guess it's come under some scrutiny more recently. You know, is it more 15,000 or 20,000? Is it oversimplifying? But I think it's generally a good rule of thumb to go by.
Okay. And so one of the things I just like to emphasize on your 2 years for the listeners who have listened to my podcast before is that those 2 years are going to go by whether you do something or not, whether you follow your passion or not. It's going to happen. Those 2 years are going to go by. And so why not take those 2 years and invest in it, like Sean's saying, and invest in your passion, because it's going to happen one way or the other. And if it doesn't happen, well, then you're not here on this earth anymore, so it doesn't matter. So, right? So
that's such a good point.
So it's going to happen one way or another. So just invest in it. Just enjoy that ride. Sean, I could go on for hours asking you about this, because it's a topic that is near and dear to my heart about following your passion, following your bliss. And you've cleared up a lot of confusion on that, and I don't want to take any more of your time. How can you mentioned a book coming out. How can people find out more about you and about the book?
Absolutely. So I guess if you made it this far, I'm going to guess that you enjoy podcasts. So you could check out my weekly podcast. That's at seanwest.com/podcast. We cover all the things that intersect business and creativity. I think you'll really like it. And then I would also love to give you a copy of my upcoming book, Overlap. So this is kind of what we've been talking about, this theme of overlapping, going from where you are to where you want to be, and how to start a business while you're in a full-time day job. And what I'm doing is I've spent the past year getting this book ready. We've got it in all the different formats, and we just finished up the audiobook, which will sell for around $29 at the launch. But what I'd like to do, Greg, is I'd like to give your listeners a free copy of the Overlap audiobook.
Wow, thank you so much, Sean. That is fantastic. What a great offer.
Set up maybe a link, something like your website / Overlap or something, if that's something we could do, we can get that set up and give all of your listeners a free copy of the audiobook. And that's, just to be clear, the book launches on September 14th, is 2017. If you sign up before then, we are going to give you the audiobook for free. It's something we're going to be selling after the book launches.
Fantastic. And we will. The URL will be warriormindcoach.com/overlap. And we'll make that happen for people to get access to your audiobook.
Fantastic.
Sean, again, thank you so much. I appreciate your wisdom, your information, your direction. This is a topic that people need because they're either jumping the gun, they're not finding their passion, or they're trying to monetize it, and they're stuck in a life of misery when you have absolutely provided some clear steps and guidance for them to break out and live a life of what I call purpose, passion, and meaning.
Well, you're incredibly kind, Greg. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Warrior Mind podcast. If you liked what you've heard, please tell your friends and subscribe by your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. Also, make sure you check out www.warriormindtraining.com. Until next time, live with courage. And remember, every facet, every compartment of your mind is to be programmed by you. And unless you take your rightful responsibility to program your own mind, the world will program it for you.